Hello and welcome along. It's Andy, your host on this here podcast.
Hello everyone, and it's episode 14. This week, Ricky Kular, freelance videographer, photographer. This episode probably a little bit more relaxed than some of the others that have been previous, mostly because I've known Ricky for donkey's years, and our relationship is just kind of that way. We laugh and joke, and I think some of that comes over in this podcast. So please enjoy me chatting to Ricky Kular. Here we are in Coventry for episode 14 of the Wedding Professionals podcast. Ooh. Coventry, notable, and I bet you didn't know this, it's the birthplace of St. George.
No way, didn't know that. Man.
So the voice you heard there, that is one Ricky Kular, freelancer extraordinaire, award-winning video... I don't know. Have you had any awards? No, no awards.
Not my thing, Andy.
The worst, the worst videographer from Coventry. Freelancer. Welcome to the pod, Rick.
Thanks, mate.
Thank you for finding the time. We've had some fun organising this because, you know, 1 minute you're off to Turkey and then you're doing this and you're doing that. And, oh, man, I can't do it this week. So, anyway, we finally got you. So thank you very, very much.
No problem.
Much.
Happy to be here, mate.
Now, just tell the listeners what you do.
I shoot weddings. No, joking. So, yeah, I'm a photographer and cinematographer. Been in the game. This is my 11th year now. So, yeah, been going strong. Love what I do, basically.
Excellent. Former life, maybe not many people actually kind of know this, but you were a teacher.
Yes, mate. So, yeah, I started photography 11 years ago when my uncle had a studio in Leamington and he needed help, basically. So I was like, yeah, no problem. I'll give you a hand. And I learned a lot of the technical side of photography more than video.
Hmm.
And then kind of went on. People kept coming in asking for weddings. He was like, nope, don't want to do it, don't want to do it. I was like, you know what, I'll do it. Ended up doing my first wedding for £150. And then kind of enjoyed it. And then from there, kind of went travelling and thought, I was enjoying a bit of photography. It weren't really a big thing to me, just sort of on the side. And then I ended up going back and training for 3 years to be a teacher, thinking that would be my career. But kind of parallel at the same time, I had my first photography business, which did well, and I, you know, got me through uni, and then it got to the point where I got married at 30. I'd graduated, got my first teaching job, and I was 6 years in the game of shooting. And yeah, so for 6 years, I did teaching year two, Monday to Friday, and then obviously working like a madman on the weekend.
Yeah,
I pretty much did probably nine months a year, 7 days a week. I did for 6 years straight, which at the time, me being me. I thought I was just, working hard and just getting my head down. But unfortunately, it kind of took a toll on my health. And I always remember this. So obviously, family time is really important to me. You end up going on holiday. My little one was just born. And my wife was really looking forward to this holiday. We're in Mallorca. And basically, I just kind of collapsed, man. Like, literally couldn't move my legs. Just couldn't walk properly. Just couldn't really move. Quite scary, actually. And then on reflection, I kind of just realised that I was basically exhausted.
Yeah.
And some changes had to be made. And basically, I kind of made the decision to leave teaching, which wasn't easy. It was obviously scary, even a full-time career, which I was, you know, doing quite well at. But I basically made the jump, and I haven't looked back since.
It's a huge thing to walk away from a guaranteed, you know, Monday to Friday, 9 to 5. Well, actually, teaching isn't a 9 to 5, is it?
That's that's the worst thing. You know, you think you can work a 9 to 5 or whatever and still shoot on the weekends. But, you know, sometimes in 2 days on the Saturday and Sunday, we're clocking up 30, 32 hours in 2 days.
Yeah.
You're working 50 hours as a teacher. You ain't even talked about juggles, manyas, pre-events. You're easily doing 100 hours a week, which isn't healthy for 9 months a year.
But still, stepping off the cliff and walking away from a guaranteed wage to relying on your own nouse, if you like, just to get yourself work and everything, I think a massive, massive... I mean, I took the same step myself. You know, I was very lucky. I had the support of my wife and everything. She gets another shout.
Go on, Mrs. Gibbs.
So, Mrs. Gibbs. So what were your feelings walking away from school on that last day?
Oh, mate, like, I'm not going to lie to you, man. I remember doing a Christmas do with all like the Midlands photographers. Like, lads, I'm going to leave teaching, I'm going to leave teaching. And that was the Christmas before COVID, right?
Hmm.
And I built myself up. I was like, yeah, I'm just going to do it now. I'm just going to do it. And to be fair, my wife, she's the one that basically... forced, not forced me, but pushed me to because she knew what I could achieve. So she's always been like, go for it, go for it. I mean, I'll be totally honest. I'm not going to sit here being like, yep, I just jumped straight into it. It wasn't that kind of thing. You know, I've got a wife, I've got kids, I've got a mortgage to pay. So I think in my head, it was always the exit plan, but I weren't stupid about it. I always made sure that basically, you know, I got to a point where there was, you know, a sum of money in my bank account that say if COVID did hit again, we'd be okay for a year kind of thing. So I did it tactically. I did it clever. Like I said, I'm not going to sit here being one of those guys, yep, I just jumped straight across. I didn't. But obviously I put plans in place that if anything did go wrong, I'm okay. Mm. And even at that point where when I had a safety net of a year, I was still scared. Like,
yeah,
I was like,
course.
Do I do it today? Do I not? And my wife's one like, basically, stop being a wimp and just do it.
Wives are brilliant things, aren't
yeah,
they?
Yeah, they're amazing. And at the time, I mean, I'm massive on my kids. I love being a dad. I'm besotted with my children. And it was to the point where like, I couldn't even, as a teacher, I mean, teachers will get this, like you can't even take your kid to school ever. Like obviously when they have school holidays, you have your school holidays. But to me, that was a big thing. So my wife said, she's like, look, you always want to take your daughter to school and this is what it's going to take. So just do it. So I just walked in. I wanted to spend more time with my family. The little one was at childcare. Like, what do we do with childcare? And I was like, you know what? All ticks all the boxes. It's just the right time.
Yeah. So now you've got free time during the week to do the school runs and that sort of stuff.
That's it, bro. So like, you know, I mean, in our industry, you know, it's tough. We work weekends. I mean, I'm a guy that has balance, I think. I think I do my best because I'm not around weekends all the time. I do my best to make sure we do things in the week and I have that time with my children. So like, for example, Mondays, I do not work, period. All my customers, they know this. As soon as they book me, like, guys, just to let you know, Mondays is my family day. And yeah, my little one doesn't go to nursery or anything on that day. So yeah, we always do something nice on Monday. Monday to me is like a Saturday.
I think that's good, actually, just to take one day out and just go, nope, I'm not doing, it doesn't matter what's going on, I'm not working that day.
100%, mate. And even like, I'll be honest, if a bank holiday comes, I might do a little bit of work. But yeah, I'm absolutely, someone could offer me an X amount, £1,000 wedding. I'm like, no, sorry, I'm not interested.
Yeah, good man. Just take me back then to that very, very first wedding. How many years ago? 12 years ago? 13 years
probably
ago?
Probably 11 and a half now. 11
okay.
and a half, yeah.
So how did you, what were you doing? Photography?
I was doing photography at the time.
Okay.
I only got into film probably around that same sort of time. Film was a different story, but yeah, photography is me and my mate. We both worked in the studio and it was like another friend had come and he's like, mate, please shoot my wedding. Like, you know, we're struggling to find someone X, Y, Z. It's like, I've never done a wedding before.
Struggling to find someone cheap.
Basically, yeah. And I ended up going to this absolutely stunning place in Oxfordshire. It was a nice, it was a beautiful, I can't remember the name now, but it was a beautiful like manor house. And I was like, look, I'll do your wedding, but I need a lens because I didn't even have a lens at the time.
Right.
So he gave me like £220 to buy a Canon 18-55 lens or whatever.
Yeah.
And I managed to shoot the wedding. Yeah. So yeah, that was it, man. We just did it. It was like, actually, this is all right. And you learn a lot along the way.
Yeah, of course. Have you still got the imagery from that wedding?
Probably, yeah.
And if you look back at it now, how do you...
Yeah, I mean, I haven't done it, but you know what? I'm going to do that today. But I often do look back. You know, even on Instagram, you look back 5 years ago, stuff that you posted then, it's like, what? Like, things change, especially in our industry. You know, technology changes, knowledge changes. Like, I'm big on investing in myself. So I always try my best to go on workshops and learn things. And you know, it all comes together to the point where at the time, you're creating something that you're really, really proud of. So that's what matters, really, I think. At the time, you're in the place where you're supposed to be to the best of your ability at that time.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can, you know, hopefully you only get better and better and better.
And so starting out as a freelancer, then working for other people mostly or for yourself?
Yeah. So, I mean, I always, to be fair, Ricky Kula Photography is my third company, you know, actually. My first one was with my mate that we shot that first wedding.
Okay.
And obviously we just kind of, you know, he went into like sort of corporate stuff.
What was that called?
It was called Kuder, K-U-D-E-R. I remember the logo actually. It was a nice logo, but yeah.
Okay.
We just probably did two weddings a year, three
combination
weddings a year.
Of two names
yeah,
here?
Yeah, it was his surname, my surname joined together.
Okay.
We had good times though. I learned a lot. I think in business, all my lessons have been given to me to get me to where I am now basically. So that was my first sort of business, and then I was probably freelancing more, probably like I said, doing 2-3 weddings on my own, probably freelancing quite a lot at that time. But that's where I think film came into it, because I think there's more photographers around then and less film people, and I kind of learned a bit of film, so I got more film work at that time.
Okay.
And equipment was different back then, obviously, man. We were shooting on those glide cams and sliders and all that stuff, right? And then yes, I was freelancing a lot for a lot of people, which was what I've learned now, which was bad for my business growth, because obviously if you're shooting for everyone else all the time, every weekend, you know, you're not free to shoot at the weddings. And my philosophy at that time was, if I'm shooting for Jibs TV, for example, like, I'm not going to take another wedding on, even if I get a sort of an inquiry for that yeah. date. I was quite loyal in that sense that if people book me, they book me. And unfortunately, my diary got booked up so much with the freelance that I didn't really have much space to do my own.
So how do you go about putting yourself out there as a freelancer? Because from nothing, how do you find people that want to book you?
So for freelance, I think, I'll be totally honest, I think it's all down to reputation.
Okay.
I think me and Amma always talk about this. We always used to say, like, you know, you've got three things. You've got, like, work ethic, equipment, and sort of, what was the other thing? Work ethic, equipment. Oh, there's another one I've totally forgot. It's gone out of my mind. But basically, we used to rank them. It's like someone could have the most expensive, amazing cameras in the world. And you think, yeah, they're a great freelancer. But they're the first one to, like, an anchor just happened. They're just sat on their phone, like, watching their phone kind of thing. Whereas, or reliability, I think, was the other one.
Sorry, okay.
Reliability was the other one. And right. me and him always agreed, always be like, work ethic first, reliability, then the equipment comes last.
Okay.
Like, it's all about your ethics and how you, you know, whenever I freelance, and it's always been, and, you know, I freelance for the best companies in the country, and it's always been my ethics. If I'm shooting for you, I treat that as if it's my own job, and I'll give 1,000,000%. And I'll go all out. I'll treat your customers like they're my customers. To an extent, obviously, I wouldn't want to step on your toes. Obviously, that's your customer. But, you know, I'd make them feel comfortable.
Sure.
And I think people see that, and then, you know, and ultimately, they'll probably see the work you produce. And it just kind of snowballs. It always just snowballs.
But again, just getting back, you've shot this first wedding. You've probably done two or three others. Are you making contacts along the way that you later want to utilise and shoot for?
Yeah, definitely. I think we did. As you know, you're shooting, obviously, if we were doing photography, there'd be other film guys at the wedding, you'd connect with them. But I think the biggest thing was, you, from that one wedding I did, for example, I would have created something that I would have posted online, for example.
Yeah.
And then people realise, oh, Rick's actually shooting weddings now. People see that work, they might like it and think, actually, you know, this is quite nice. Get in touch. We need a shooter. Are you available? And that's how it kind of, you know.
So the social media aspect of it plays a huge part.
Absolutely massive. I think back then it didn't. I remember, like, struggling to get leads because social media wasn't really the forefront of business back then. I mean, come on, you're talking 11, 12 years ago. It was a kind of network, and you go to weddings, you meet other people, you know, that sort of viable working with other industry professionals. Whereas now it's a total different ballgame. I think, you know, social media has such a big, big, big place in the whole of the wedding industry, not in photo and video. It, you know, it's the basic showcase of what everyone does in one place, really. And, you know, I mean, I think it's dangerous in some aspects because people can look at things and not get misled, but don't believe everything you see on social media, you know, sometimes, because on social media you can see how good someone's work is, but you can't see how reliable they are, for example.
Yeah, true.
So it's important to do your homework. But yeah, social media is absolutely massive in our industry.
Well, you're quite big in this, aren't you? Because you're sort of peering into the camera. Going, what's up, guys? I'm here today at so-and-so, shooting for so-and-so.
I think what happened, like, I'll be honest, like I said, even though it's my 11th year, I think the last probably 4 years, I did okay, right? Few weddings, probably go back 4 years ago to my second brand, which was called Cineca, which was supposed to be like a cinema, but with a K for, like, obviously cooler, but yeah. But I basically...
That's what it was. Oh, yeah. Right, okay.
But what happened was
Completely passed me by, that
After
reference.
Sort of research, people couldn't say the name. They're like, oh, is this...
Yeah.
Signy? And I was like, well, something's not right here. And at the time, I was teaching and obviously being a dad and being a husband and didn't really have time. But then when lockdown happened... Obviously, that's probably, what, 7 years ago? Well, no, sorry, 7 years into my career, I've learned so much. I'd learned so much about branding, and I kind of knew where I wanted to go. And I think Nick was the one that actually said it to me. Life-changing comment. He goes, like, I was struggling, man. Like, I was working so much. And he said, Rick, come on. He's like, you're doing 50% teaching, 50% shooting, right? He's like, are you doing all right? I was like, yeah, you know, I'm doing pretty decent. And he's like, well, imagine if you did 100% film. Imagine what you could do then. And I was like, whoa. That's so true.
Who said this
Nick,
to you?
Nick, you know, from USR.
Okay,
DJ,
yeah.
We were having a conversation after
top
the
lad.
Gig. Yeah.
Hi,
yeah,
Nick.
Yeah, shout out to Nick. Yeah, he basically said something along those lines to me. It's always stuck in my mind. And then as soon as I left teaching, I wasn't a man in the business. I became a man on the business. And I really sort of used my set of skills to basically build the business. I weren't constantly just shooting, editing.
Yeah.
It's more about, okay, where can I take this brand and where are we going to go with it? And, you know, of all the things I've learned, I have a very close circle of industry friends. So shout out to all of them. But basically, I've just amalgamated everything that I knew. And, you know, I was doing, like, you know, the last few years we've been doing really, really well, touch wood. And I think a lot of that has because I made that decision to be like, my USP is basically my personality.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a bit of a out there kind of guy, like confidence. And I thought, my wife was like, well, show it. Like, you need to show that. And my in-laws, and, you know, they're quite big on social media, so they kind of had a good chat with me. And I was like, let's just try it, see what happens, you know? Yeah. And I was talking to Jazz Johal, actually, a few weeks ago, and he was saying, you know, I see your stuff. And I was like, yeah, do you know, I just post more about me and my personality and what I'm into and what the customer's buying into as me as a person, as opposed to here's some nice pictures or here's a nice video.
Sure.
And it's, you know, it's working. So.
Yeah, yeah. No, no question. It's it does work very well. And I'm quite envious of your ability to just appear into a camera and talk rubbish.
It is scary, though. It is scary. But yeah, you just do it, right?
So along the way, have there been other photographers or videographers that have inspired you? When you look at their work, do you think, oh, wow.
Yeah, I mean, I'll be honest with you. Going back 1,000,000%, I think... When I first started as my first freelance job, Manny was there, Pablo, shout out to Manny. And, you know, that's going back 10 years.
Yeah.
And I used to shoot with him. And back then, he was a talented guy. I mean, we were using Canons, but we were using, like, monopods, like, Steadicams, all this crazy stuff that we were doing. And, you know, it was nice to be in that environment. I think through the years, I used to look at other people's work. Yeah, you know, but going back to sort of the brand now, Ricky Cooler, which is, what, 3-4 years old now? I've kind of gone into a different sort of wavelength. I appreciate good work if it's out there. Like, if it comes up, and if, you know, if Manny's posting something, or Amar from Make It Real's posting something, you know, very close friends of mine, you know, I'd show a bit of support and follow. But my kind of mindset is, I don't really look at other people doing photo and video. I kind of just, my mindset is, it's nice to show appreciation, but I'm you know, I don't want to get consumed in just looking at other people's stuff and, yeah. you know, consuming everyone else's stuff. It's just, yeah, it's not my vibe, man. I just, like I said, I do really appreciate when people are doing good work, and now and again I will jump on, or if, you know, so-and-so's posted something, I'll show a bit of support. But I'm not the kind of guy that sits there scrolling Instagram looking at certain people and looking at all their work. Yeah, it's not something that I do.
So what would you say your sort of style is? Are you a cinematic shooter?
So okay, so film wise I think we haven't really spoke much about film, but I think my photo style is obviously, you know, I'm obsessed with light. My favourite thing in shooting wedding, I know it sounds really, really weird, but my favourite thing is basically being in a really rubbish situation.
Yeah.
Like, in the worst conditions ever. Light's horrible. Like, the most dingiest. Like, I've done portraits in bathrooms before, dude. Like, I've had nowhere, so I've had to open the door, light it in a certain way, and just... And that's what gives me a buzz. That's, like, my favourite
thing. Making something out of nothing.
Yeah, out of nothing. Because, yeah. Obviously, you know... I've travelled all over the world, luckily. Now, if I'm in the middle of Venice and, you know, with that backdrop, like, it's not as hard
how
as being
can you get that wrong?
A little hall in, you know, Birmingham. You've got to try and create something. And, you know, you always want to create something for the customer, and you want something for them to have something special. So that's something that really, really buzzes me on photo and video, both. And my photo style is very, yeah, you know, it's natural. I'm obsessed with light. I love creating stuff that's different. And it's similar on the film side. But my film side, I kind of lost my passion, to be honest, about... 3 years ago, I was kind of like just making these long films, and it was just like, oh, I didn't want to, like, it weren't really, I weren't enthusiastic about it. I was like, I was doing it, it was fine. And obviously, I was getting paid to do it, so obviously, you've got a job to do and be professional. But my heart just weren't in it, and I really reflected, and this is going back to me being on the business and not in the business. And I was like, right, what can I do here? Like, what would really, really excite me? And on the film side, the most exciting thing was trailers, right? Like, making something that's absolutely stunning in 2 minutes.
Sure.
And getting all those amazing shots and creating something that's very, very, you know, beautiful. And I always, I think my film trailer style is still, I still use the same things. Like, it'll always at the end, when the beat finishes, it'll just go to black. Like, things like that. I have a certain thing that I do in my films. But that's when I basically thought of my 60-minute film. So I don't actually make long edits anymore. I only specialise in making short form, really creative, 45 minutes to an hour. And for some people, they're like, whoa, we're only going to get 45 minutes an hour. And I'm like, that's cool. It's not for everyone, but I'm after the people that it is for. And, you know, I'm doing, I say, 25-30% of my business a year is still making those short films. And I'm really happy with that.
This is something that amazes me about the kind of Asian wedding market video-wise, is the fact that there's, you know, I'll exaggerate, 14 hours of dancing, and you've got to get every single frame right to the very end. And there's a lot of people that do shoot like that, and it's just like, who is ever going to sit down and watch all that? Do you know what I mean? Who's going to sit and watch all that?
I think, to be honest, mate, I think it comes down to generational differences, and I think there's a massive, what's the word? I think the different generations, especially in Asian culture, they have different expectations of film.
Okay.
Like, you know, like when they got married, they had a 10-hour film on 5 VHSs, etc.
Yeah.
And then cinematography came out, and we're trying to create something that's, you know, nice and cinematic. And look, don't get me wrong, there's people that do an amazing job. Like Ammar, for example, is amazing what he does in terms of making a long-form edit, but still making it quite creative. But at the same time, for me, like I said, it's not, I'm not putting anyone down, but for me, my heart went in it. Like, yeah, like I said, for some people, that's absolutely great. And I still turn around to people on a daily basis, and I'd be like, well, this is my film product. And they're like, well, you know, my mum and dad might not be happy. That's absolutely fine. Like, you know, there's no problem at all. You know, I am blessed that I do photo and video, so I can still, you know, work, talk to them about the photography side and recommend someone that is good at the long form edits.
But yeah,
I think it's definitely a cultural thing that they want the parents to be like, the parents are happy that they've got it all covered and it is on a film somewhere. So yeah.
Despite the fact that probably nobody will watch
it. I mean, that's the thing. Like, obviously, people always watch their trailers, and I was like, hang on, like, I text all my like industry friends, like I'll say to them, like, dude, I've just made the best film in my life. And then next time, like, dude, I've just made the next best film.
Yeah.
Because I'm that passionate about it, and it is amazing.
Yeah.
I'm quite protective over it because I do feel like, you know, I'm pioneering that and I'm specialising in that sort of sector. And I feel like a lot of people are going to start copying it when it starts coming around. But at the minute, I'm so proud of what I'm creating. And it's absolutely like, it's watching a movie, a feature film,
yeah,
that you don't have to press fast forward, you don't have to rewind it. And it's
because there are no dull moments.
Yeah, and it's just pure. It's like watching a full-on movie. I use proper like movie music when I don't use traditional songs. And the way I've pieced it together, it took a long time for me to figure out. In fact, I swear, about 8 years ago, I had a conversation with you, like, I've got this idea. I don't know, you probably don't remember. But I was like, I've got this idea, but you know, the dance floor. How am I going to get over the dance floor? I can't get my head around it. And then, after deep reflection, I was like, actually, I've got an idea here, and it worked.
Yeah, can't disagree with that. So, talk to me about advice that you would have for couples.
So I think generally across the whole wedding industry, you know, everyone is amazing what they do. I've said that before already in this podcast that, you know, there's so many talented individuals out there, no matter what sector they're in, whether it's makeup, decor, photography, DJing, whatever it might be. I know I missed loads there, but I'm just talking.
Well, that's kind of the point of the pod, really, is to showcase all these, you know, amazing individuals.
And like, you know, they are all amazing at what they do, but I think, I mean, everyone has a budget, right? Everyone literally, you know, has their own budget, which is absolutely fine. And there's, you know, there's people out there that we hopefully would fit into your budget. But I think the most important thing, definitely 1,000,000% that I would say to couples planning their wedding is just do your research in terms of, like, you know, Instagram's great for showcasing stuff, but I think testimonials or word of mouth for someone that's actually been through that experience and used those suppliers, if they turn around and said, yep, you know what, they were absolutely brilliant, then that's worth £1,000,000 because you might then see someone on Instagram that you've never had any connection with. You just see what's going on socials and you think, yeah, they're brilliant as well, but they're £1,000 cheaper than the other guy. Okay, fair enough. If the other guy's not in your budget, then fair enough, you've got to do what you've got to do. But if they are within your budget, that recommendation is honestly priceless.
Do you think that £1,000 cheaper is reflective of a level of talent or a lack of confidence in their own product, or what would account for that?
It's a very, very good question, to be fair, dude. I think, me personally speaking, you know, I think it comes down to the individuals, and especially, you know, I've been through the charging £200 to a wedding to charging what I do now. So I'm only speaking from my perspective, but
I think £8,000 for a wedding is ludicrous, man.
He doesn't know my price, I'm just saying it out there. But I think it comes down to what the person values as their time. Like, you might get, you know, younger teams out there that are doing what they do, which is fab. Like, we were all there one day, and they might be charging, you know, less because that's all they're hungry for and that's what they're doing. But I think the more experience we get is we value our time, right?
Yeah.
Like, I'll be honest with you. Like, if someone said to me, oh, you're free that weekend, I'll just do it £1,000 cheap, but I could probably still earn a fair amount of money that weekend. But to me, I'm like, I value my time. That's time I could spend with my kids, and you can't put money in. Like, it's not.
We're back to that, really, aren't we?
And you're back to like, you know, it's not just taking photos. It's what training have you been on? What equipment have you used over the years? What mistakes have you made? What feedback have you had from parents saying, "Oh, actually, you know, I would have liked you to have done it this way." And you put that all together to become where you are now. Mm. And it's the same with DJs. You know, they might have been through like certain experiences, had feedback, they've grown, they've been on training, they use different equipment. Same as makeup artists. You know, they've been on certain workshops and learnt their skill set. Have certain, you know, makeup that they use that might be more expensive. And if they charge that price because they value that time, then fantastic. Now, I do think there is an issue where there's people that go the other way and they're £1,000 or the same level, for example, in terms of, you know, they might not have the experience. They might not have the... I'll tell you where it works. Freelance. Let me tell you something about freelance, okay? So when I started out, that's the wrong thing to say, is... Say I was charging X amount of money. I'm not going to tell what people I used to charge for freelancing because I don't want to tell people. But what would happen was the standard rate was probably £10 an hour cheaper, right? And just because I was charging what I thought I was valued
worth,
at.
Yeah.
And I say, for example, I had 25,000 worth of equipment, 8 years experience, decent. There's people that had one camera with like £1,000 worth of experience, 1 year, 1 year experience, 1,000 worth of equipment, and then they think, oh, Rick's charging that, so I'm going to charge the same.
Okay.
And then that's what happens, and that's where the mismatches can't happen, which is why customers, again, probably
need
could get
to do
lost
their research.
Because, yeah, just because so-and-so's charging that, so-and-so's charging that, they could look at them and go, well, they're charging that, so I'm going to charge the same. They haven't actually looked and thought about their thought process, and I'm worth this amount of money, so that's what I'm going to charge.
Yeah.
Which, for me... I know I've worked mine out and I'm happy with what I do, and I'm not going to devalue myself. And I think it's out of order on clients as well sometimes.
Yeah.
I'm not going to charge X amount to someone and then charge £2,000 less to someone else because it's unfair, right?
Well, yeah. And also, I mean, I've had the same thing where somebody sort of, oh, will you do it? You know, knock off. It's my first time. I'm going to give you lots of work. And can you do the first one like half price or something? I say, well, no, because if I'm standing there having offered it this for half price, and then somebody else is, and I'm going to stand there for the whole evening thinking I could be somewhere else earning the proper, you know, the proper level. And that's why I don't discount.
But I think that's where customers, they need to do their research, because it's a minefield.
Yeah.
And like I said, the only way of getting through it is, I think personally, like I said, this is my personal opinion, is getting valued feedback. And the other thing to tell is, if you see, I'll tell you another way you could tell, is that if people are, you know, say for example, you see me at a wedding, and I've done Mr. Jibs' wedding. Here we are. This is Ricky Kulai. It's Saturday. We're at Mr. Jibs' wedding. But then say a year later, you say, oh, this is Ricky Kulai again. And I'm at Mr. Jibs' sister's wedding. And dude, here's Mr. Jibs from last year. Yeah, great. Whatever. If you see stuff like that on social, that's a good indicator, because the company is retaining business because they've done a good job.
Yeah.
That's another way of, you know, telling that. If a person's in with a family and they're doing regular family for that work, and you're seeing regular pictures or things from that person, or you're seeing them as a guest, you're seeing them at all these weddings, that's a good indicator.
Well, I think Jeff talked about that on the Toastmaster episode when he was sort of saying, I asked him, you know, when did he feel he had arrived? And he said when the family rebooked for another event after, and then he thought, okay, yeah, this is legit.
Wish
yeah.
I said that.
Okay, it's half-time break-in time, and here we go again. Just please share the podcast if you're listening, you're enjoying it. I mean, you can send me cash if you like. That's very nice. That would support it. But the biggest support is sharing it on any social media stream you care to mention. The pod is available on all major platforms, so please share it out there, rate it, do whatever you can just to support it. And let's just keep getting the word out and showcasing some of the fabulous people that work in our business. Having said all that, let's get back to Ricky Kulai. So what would you say your percentage is between photo and video?
I'd say at the minute I'm probably doing 75% photo, 25%-ish video. And I'm really happy with that, because I don't know whether people know this, but film editing is way more time demanding than photo editing. I'm not saying it's easier, but I'm just saying it absorbs a lot more time.
Yeah.
And for me, I'm absolutely massive on service. Like, I don't want to sit here blow my own trumpet, but that's the biggest thing to me.
Well, you might as well sit here and blow your own trumpet. Nobody else is going to. Boom, boom.
If I don't blow it, no one else is. But no, I am really, really huge on service. And I feel like when you're constantly editing film, that absorbs all your time.
Yeah.
And again, you don't have time to spend on your business. And yeah. that's the most important thing. I mean, I think you've got the best, some of the best photographers might not necessarily have the best business acumen. And therefore, they might not have the best service. Or vice versa, you might have someone that's really, really good at business and really good at their customer service. Might not be the best shooter in the world, but they still create a good product.
Mm.
And it's one of those. I mean, people are passionate about it. And for them, if their drive is like, I just want to create amazing stuff, fantastic. For me, I want a bit of a balance. You know, I love creating. I love going into, you know, different couples, different environments and doing what I do. And a lot of it is my mind, to be honest. The way I would go in and, you know, the bottle that's happening, for example, I'd be like, I wouldn't even really care about the bottle. I'll get a shot. But my first impression would be like, where's mum? And I would have clocked where she is just to get that tear.
Hmm.
So a lot of it is about the thought process as opposed to what settings am I using? Shall I shoot shallow? Shall I use it this? It's more about documenting, capturing moments, freezing that time for them to look back on years to come.
Yeah.
And it's actually really funny, actually. I did a wedding recently and a gentleman had passed away in the family. And I turned up to the second wedding, not knowing it was the same family. And they'd printed a photo of the gentleman. He's a lovely, lovely man. And I actually shot that photo like 7 years ago.
Oh, really?
And they've actually blown it up and had it presented on this wedding day. And that's what we do, is we're capturing moments, we're capturing time.
We absolutely do. And it's a privilege to... I was off mic there. We absolutely do. And it's a privilege, I think, for us to be in that position. What was your first job when you left school? Did you go straight into the photo studio with
you?
No,
so I had a bit... To be honest, I had a bit of a... I don't even want to talk about it, not talk about it. We didn't have the... You know, mum worked really hard, but she was a single parent. So basically, when I left school, I went to uni first time, but had to end up working. Had like four jobs at the time. And then that was one of them, basically. But I was just doing bits and bobs just to, you know, get money in. You're a young kid then. You just keep working hard, don't you? And then I kind of... Then, like I said, I went travelling. I was like, I'm not really doing anything with my life. I learnt my skills from the studio. And then I always, like, wanted to be a teacher. First time I went to uni, it was to be a teacher, you know. It was just what my passion was, kind of thing. And then, that was it. I came back and then it just all...
Do you ever drive past your old school and look in and think, oh, I wish I was in there today?
It's actually funny. I've actually shot some stuff for that school. I've been back here to shoot. So I've done some corporate stuff for other schools. Like, I've made films for them. But yeah, I've been back to like do drone stuff for them because there's some lessons that I did where like the kids would make... You know, a bicycle. Like, big. Remember Art Attack?
Yes.
When they'd make something, like, they'd shoot down. So we did that with kids, and they'd, like, make a shape of, like, transport for their transport. I'd take drone shots of them. So I've been back in to do that. And I still keep in touch with some of my teacher friends. But, yeah, it was definitely the best decision I made because, going back to that, sorry, I know you've got questions there.
No,
I think it's really important to talk about this, actually. It's basically about mental health, right? Because I don't think guys talk about it enough. But in my head at the time, I was like... Yeah, I'm just working hard. I'm doing really, like, you know, doing well. And you basically just keep going to the point where my body just crashed. And it weren't even a body thing. It was a mental thing where I just exhausted myself out. And, yeah, I'm just going to openly talk about this. Yeah, why not? And basically, I went on holiday again, the same thing happened. I was like, right, there's no way in this world I can go on holiday and keep worrying about I'm going to get ill. Something needs to change. So I thought... Originally, it was just like a bit of anxiety because I've got two girls that I love to bits and I was so stressed about what's going to happen if we go on holiday. Kept going round and round. So I was like, I want to talk to someone. So I spoke to a counsellor thinking that that was the reason. And it wasn't. It's basically that I wasn't looking after myself physically and mentally. So, and she always, you know, I always remember her saying this to me. She said, Ricky, you're on the play with your kids and your wife and the masks come down. And bear in mind, like, I'm flat out. Like, I'm physically working as hard as I can, doing my best. And she's like, the gas mask come down, what are you going to do? I was like, well, put them on my kids. And she's like, that's your problem. She's like, if you look after yourself first and put your mask on first, you save the whole plane. And that really, really stuck with me. And since that day, I make a conscious effort now to make time for myself. And by doing that, I'm a better father, I'm a better husband, I'm a better photographer because I've got more energy to do it, which is why, like, the last 3 weeks I've taken off. I booked them off. We went to Turkey for a family holiday. I spent Father's Day with my kids. Because just that little bit of time just to recuperate and you become a better person. I think it's important, especially for men, because what's funny is, like, there might be 100 people hearing this. There might be something, oh, yeah, whatever, Rick. But then there might be that one person that actually can relate. And I'll tell you one thing. I've openly spoke about my journey with mental health to all my industry friends. And zero of them have turned around and been like, whatever. They've all been like, yeah, I can relate to that. Yeah, I can understand what you're saying. And it's actually really important that, you know, especially us as industry, you know, we're busy on weekends. We're not with our families. We don't have that time. we haven't got that balance. So, you know, we have to adjust, but it's a really important thing to, I think, speak about personally.
Yeah, I think most of us probably, we're 100% aware of mental health and how important it is, but we don't, like you say, A, we don't talk about it, and B, we probably mostly ignore it and just think, no, I've got to earn money, got to earn money. Because in your head, having enough in the bank to cover the mortgage for, you know, 5 years if there's another pandemic or something.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that's another thing that I've learned from my journey. I'm so, so happy I have, because I was so head down, work, that I probably got another, I've probably got another 7 years of where, like, I'm her dad and I'm her world. As soon as she hits 12, she'll be like, right, I want to go to cinema. Sorry, dad, not interested.
Yeah.
And like, she's two. And dude, like, I'm with her twice a week, every week, quality time, guaranteed, do whatever we want. It's happening.
Yeah.
And for me, it's like, I don't want to spend the next 7-8 years trying to make my money, trying to set my foundation, so when they're growing up, they're doing their own thing, and I miss that journey.
Yeah.
It's just finding that balance where get work okay, do okay. But for me, personally, like I said, I'm not talking like, you know, it's my personal decision, but for me, it's all about spending time with my family, man, and cherishing those moments. And on a daily basis, like, it's what drives me, man. Like, yeah, I'm working tonight, I'm shooting on Saturday, but apart from that, you know, I'll spend time with the family and just make memories with them, because life just goes so
fast. You never get a second chance at that. It's like the first dance.
Yeah.
You don't get a second crack at it. And if you're not here and you're not with your wife and your beautiful kids, you've missed it and it's too late. And suddenly they're grown up and, like you say, you know, they're off to university and you missed the whole
shebang.
Yeah,
I'm just enjoying the ride, man. So that's my definite drive at the minute, is just to get business to the point where, you know, we're doing cool, but yeah, it's just spending time with the family. Mm.
Is your job fun?
Yeah, you know what I mean, man. Like, you'll see in my stories, like, I'm not a fake person. That's one thing you could never say about me. But yeah, I do. You know, it's nice when we turn up to weddings and, you know, you are leaving your family or whatever for the weekend. But my wife's really supportive over that. So she's always doing something with the family or something. So the kids are always doing something nice.
Sure.
So I don't feel guilty. And my wife's really supportive ever since, you know, we've been together. She's always said, Ricky, this is all I've ever known. She's like, you know, she's really supportive. But yeah, back to your question, I do. Like, on a weekend, you get to see, obviously, all of us get together on the weekend. Basically, it's like being with, basically, not a social, like, obviously, we're there to work, but the social side of it, you're still having a laugh with your mates, still cracking a few jokes. And I'm lucky enough to sort of, I keep my circle close. Like, even my freelance now, there's probably only three companies I freelance for. I used to, back in the day, anyone, whatever. Whereas now, if I do freelance, which is, I'll be honest, quite rare now, because I'm doing so well in terms of my own business that I just physically don't have the time, but you're seeing the same people, right? And catching up with them and talking about, like, their families. And then at the same time, you're pushing each other. Like, there's loads of shooters that I've been with. Not that I'm competitive, but we'll be doing a couple shoot. And I'll be like, right, in my head, I've got that light there, that backdrop there, that. Okay, cool, I've got my shot sorted. Some guys will have a chat. And then it will get, like, not competitive, but it's nice. Like, you know, one of my industry friends might show me, you know, a shot that they've done, like, okay, that's nice. I shot it this way, same pose, same lighting, same everything. Nice, we've created something, like, beautiful there, right?
Yeah. And different,
yeah. And, you know, and obviously, like, the social side, like, I'm always having a crack with the family. Always. It's a really funny story, actually. I never speak a word of Punjabi until I got married.
Okay,
I remember doing one of my first weddings in Birmingham, and he was basically talking to me in Punjabi. I was like, dude, I don't understand what you're saying. And at that point, I was like, do you know what? This ain't right, man. So I made a conscious effort of learning. And, you know, my wife knows a lot, so she'd teach me, like, words and that. And doing weddings, I'd make mistakes. And all, like, the older generation would laugh at me, like, go on, then teach me the proper way of saying it. Put it into context for me. And then I just learn. And whereas now, I'm at the point where I have such a laugh with, especially the older generation, like, you know, getting the grandparents to hug each other, like, pretending it's their wedding day, like, give a little kiss on the head kind of thing. And they're cracking up, and that's creating that moment.
Mm.
It, you know, and I'm talking in their home language, they understand, which makes them feel comfortable. But yeah, I actually love my job.
I need to learn Punjabi myself.
Yeah, I reckon you should, man.
Where do you think the pinnacle of your work is currently? I'm trying to find different ways to ask this question, but what would you say is the moment that you felt you'd arrived and you were legitimate in the business?
I think for me, it was a big thing to me was destination stuff. Mm-hmm. So obviously as a teacher, I had so many inquiries, people wanting me to go. But with teaching, you can't book annual leave. Like, it's not one of those things that you can do. So I missed out on, like I said, 6 years of potential at that experience. And, you know, destination stuff's nice, but it's hard because you are in the bright sun in the middle of a nice city or wherever you might be, and you've got a job to do.
Yeah.
And I did miss out on that experience. And I think for me, I think last year I went away twice. I left in April 22. So that year I went away twice. But like, dude, this year, I'm like, this, I've been away 11, 12 times. I'm in India next month, Tuscany the month after. And it's nice to like obviously travel around. And to be fair, it makes you a better photographer. Not for the glam of it, because it's not glamorous. It's hard work. It's proper, proper graft. But in terms of your skill set, what I've learned in being in those situations has really driven me to be a better photographer and a better video guy.
Yeah, destinations are a great thing to do. And I always kind of, you know, when you're abroad somewhere, and I just always stop for a moment and think, do you know what? Somebody else has paid for me to come to this place and be here and shoot this wedding. And it's just like, what a privilege. I mean, the Bahamas, I went to the Bahamas with Sal.
Amazing, yeah.
And it's just like there for 10 days and you just think, wow.
Yeah, amazing. You know,
it's like you say, very hard work and not a free holiday, but you get to see the world and it's great. But talk to me about the challenging ones. You were talking earlier about shooting bride portrait in a bathroom or whatever. Talk to me about maybe one of your most challenging environments to shoot in.
Oh, mate. Like I said, that was probably the worst. I think we had a house where it was like a smaller house, and they had loads of family from like India come over. And there was literally like, dude, every single room had just like nothing. No blank walls. Everything was just like filled with suitcases or blankets, as people do. Like, you know, it was only a small sort of environment. And I was like, right, what am I going to do here? So, yeah, I ended up basically opening the shower door so it was a clean sort of backdrop behind. Ended up putting a light, like, in front, in the bath, in front, and just, yeah, bang, that's, they're nice shots, you know, they come out really, really good. Yeah, I think I even got a couple of reflection shots. Like, you never tell it was shot in a bathroom. And I don't think anyone else, I don't think the bride would ever want anyone to know that either. But yeah, what can you do? We still create some nicer. Shout out to the bride.
Competition wise, as a freelance, well, you're sort of moving away from freelancing, aren't you?
I don't really freelance much anymore. Like this year, I think I've done, I probably do two in the whole year, whereas last year I did.
I feel quite privileged 20? Then because you did one for me. So
yeah, I've got you, Andy.
Cheers, man. Thank you. But as a freelancer, what do you think your competition? Are you elbowing each other out of the way to get jobs? Or
no, I think in general, mate, not just freelancing. I think as sort of, what do you call us, company directors as well. Like, I think generally across the industry, I think personally there's more demand than there is supply. Like, there is so much business out there. There's so many weddings. Each weekend, like, there's so... Like, you know, I'm blessed to be in a position that if I wanted to work on Sunday, which I don't, so no one texts me, but, you know, I could probably drop a text that saying, guys, does anyone need an extra hand on Sunday? I'm free, and I'm guaranteed to get work. So I think we are lucky in that sense, especially, you know, from April to sort of October, September, there's plenty of work out there.
Sure.
But, yeah, I don't think... You know, even for like general clients, I don't think we are sort of elbowing way for each other. Like, you know, I would never ever ask, like, who have you inquired with? That's not my style at all. Mm. There's lots of people that would do that. And I'll always honestly say, you know, everyone's brilliant out there. Everyone's creating what they do. And we are so lucky to be in such a creative industry where freelancers, photographers, video guys, like, it's amazing what they do, dude. Like,
yeah, man.
Like, come on, you're on the crane, like... Us freaking at 4 o'clock in the morning with 3 hours sleep. Like, the other thing is, you've got to remember, is that we're creating absolute amazing stuff. Like, one thing that really gets me is that people think, oh yeah, photographers are just photographers. All photographers just take pictures. But what they don't understand is how much time we've invested in ourselves, in our own knowledge, in our experience. And right, anyone can do a 16-hour day, right? Cool. Like, we can all work hard, have a hard day, but try doing a 16-hour day on 3 hours sleep, not being fed, having no water, and then having 3 hours sleep and doing the same thing again. So you're cracking up 32 hours worth of work on 6 hours sleep with no food and no water, but you still create something that's amazing.
Take a bloody bottle of water is what I would say.
But you don't have time sometimes. Sometimes I just try and rob yours, to be fair.
So I'm not going to ask that, actually.
When you say that, you can edit that out, or you should leave it in there?
No, I'll edit that bit out. So obviously you're still, you know, young and fit and muscly and everything. So can you imagine yourself doing this same thing in 5 years' time? Or, you know, what's the ambitions for the Kula Empire?
Oh, mate, to be fair, I'm working on something, right? And it's big. Ooh. It's like, it's a game changer. It's, but I can't talk about it. I'm sorry. The reason
that
being,
is the point of a podcast, though.
The reason is that this is an absolute game changer for the industry, for us as a brand. It's kind of at the it's going to be big. So there's something big that's going to happen in the next probably year or so with us as a brand. But I think as a photography Asian wedding industry, I think it's going to be a game changer for everyone.
Well, at least drop a breadcrumb or two, then. Come on. You can't.
The reason why I don't want to say anything to anyone, I haven't even told any of my best industry friends, is that they're going to copy it.
Well, of course. So I mean, you know,
I want to make sure, because it's that much of a sick idea, bro, that I don't want anyone to be, have any inkling. But there's something big happening for the brand that's going to enable me to work and still work and enjoy what I do, but like I don't have to work as much. But yeah, sorry.
Is this involving AI?
No, nothing to do with that. Nothing to do with that. This is just a business decision, and how to. I think, you know, one thing with photographers is they'll always come with a problem, and I don't know why. Like, there might be a problem, like, I can't even name one now. Say, for example, they'll be like, I'm not replying back to my leads, example.
Yeah.
Like in quick enough time.
Okay.
Like that's a problem. I'm like, well, dude, why don't you, maybe hire some help or do something? Like, no, I can't do that. It's very much like, no, can't do it. Whereas one thing I'll say to everyone is that never say no. In our business, never say no. Just look at a situation, look at a problem and be like, okay, that's the problem. How can we solve this problem? And that's been my mindset since I've started this business, and I've learned a lot about myself in terms of, I always used to be that guy that said, I ain't doing that. I can't do that. I'm not interested, not doing that. But actually, when you reflect and think, actually, here's a problem in this business. What ideas have we got to get over this? All right, sweet. Let's go, kind of thing. Again, like, same with my social media. Like, I was rubbish at it, dude. Like I'm old now. Like, all these young kids are, like, amazing at it. And I'm just like, what am I doing here? And I was like, right, the problem is social media. Right, I can teach myself a little bit about it or whatever. And just try things, and if things work, they work. But yeah, sorry about, I can't disclose what's happening, but it's going to be big.
Well, keep a lookout for it. Yeah, I will certainly keep an eye. Does it involve me? Am I part of it?
No, sorry. You're a good lad, though.
Okay, thank you very much. Lad, 63.
He's big, he's great, he's Ricky Kula's mate, Andy Lockwood.
So, you know what the final question is on the podcast?
I do know this. Give me a second.
What? You see? Again, this is when we find out who listens and who doesn't.
I do know this because...
No, that's it. I'm not even asking it now.
I do know it. Isn't it something about what's next for... No. You've asked that question. I know you're going to ask me. I'll be like, yeah, I knew that.
Okay, so... Assuming I could magically...
What other job would you do in the industry? Boom. Told you I'd listen.
So what would you do?
I would 1,000,000%, 1,000,000,000% be a DJ.
Everybody wants to be a DJ.
Yeah, man. Like, I used to be a DJ like back when I was younger, when I was working those four jobs. That was one of my jobs. And I don't know, man. Like, to be fair, it's funny because one first thing I'll ask my couples when they inquire is, oh, who's the DJ? Because I know if it's so-and-so and so-and-so and so-and-so, it's going to be a party, right?
Mm.
And again, it comes to like people's perception that a DJ is just a DJ. No, they are not. No, they are talented individuals that are amazing at what they do. Same as all the people in the industry. People have to get off that platform where, oh, there's this DJ that charges X and there's this DJ that charges X. I'm just going to go with that DJ. But why? Like, have you done any research on that DJ? Have you had any testimonials of how well they've done? Have you ever been in their presence? Like, but yeah, 1,000,000% be DJ because I feel like they create the party, man. Like, they take the whole crowd through a journey. And if they, you know, if they're great... Jazz Johal actually said this to me, you know, that the DJ and the photographers and the video guys, we're kind of joined because if the DJ is raving, the video is going to be sick and the picture is going to be sick.
Sure.
If the party's a bit quiet, it's like, well, what have we got to shoot? We haven't really got anything to shoot. We have to end up, you know, doing other stuff. So, but yeah, they're amazing individuals. I think I think a big thing, though, is that I'm rubbish at, though, is mic skills. I'd never be able to talk on the mic, but, you know, that's what
Well,
makes...
you've just spent 40 minutes talking on
yeah,
mic.
Yeah, I'm in front of, like, 600 people. Imagine me, like, yo, like, this is... Yeah, everyone rave. Everyone say, oh, yeah, I couldn't do that.
No, it's fine. I've just been told... I've just been told that the bride and groom are about ready to make their entrance. If you just kindly take to your seats... I've just been told.
I think it's because when I used to be a DJ, when I used to talk on the mic, everyone used to just rip me. Everyone used to just take the mic out of me the whole weekend. So I was like, yeah, but I would be a DJ because, like I said, I think it's a really fun thing to do. It's hard work. I see these boys. They're tired. Like, you think they turn up at 1, 2 o'clock in the afternoon. They don't. They're up from like 4 or 5 loading vans, unloading, setting stuff up. But yeah, they're super talented.
Mm. Who's your favourite?
Oh, dude, you can't ask me that question.
I can. I just did.
No, I don't think I can answer that. Can I just, like, name at least 3 or 4 or 5?
Okay, give me your top 3 DJs.
I can't put them in order, though.
Okay.
Not in order, so...
No,
this
not
is a
in
disclaimer.
Order.
I'm not putting... Dude, like, I've got so many friends. I don't know... All right, this is...
You know
this,
how I said I wasn't going to throw you under the bus?
Yeah, I feel like you're throwing me under the bus. As well. But listen, I love all my DJ friends. As a disclaimer, you're all amazing at what you do. I'm just going on, like, my parties that I've had, but I definitely would have to say Jazz Joho.
Yeah.
Nicku.
Yeah.
Jag Climax.
Can't believe you left out Harv Kudos.
Oh, this is what I mean. You're putting me in a difficult situation. I'm probably closer to Harv than I'm Jazz Joho, but yeah, sorry, Harv. You're there as well, bro.
I think I'm doing it. I'm with Harv this weekend.
Yeah, he's a good
And it's going to be it's going to be a great catch up. It's been ages since I've seen him.
Yeah,
so,
but, yeah, sorry, all the other DJs. You know, I love you all. You're all amazing. Just Andy put me on the spot and shot me. Gutted.
Listen, man, thank you very, very much for taking the time. It's been an absolute pleasure. And I've got to say, actually, one cup of tea. I don't know. The hospitality services that are offered to the podcaster here.
Sorry, I even rang you saying, do you want eggs and toast, mate?
Yeah, you did, actually. Okay, leave that out. Cut that bit out. Okay, so, yeah, man, thank you. It's been an absolute pleasure. And I look forward to seeing you on another job somewhere soon.
No, it's been an absolute pleasure, bro. Thank you for getting me involved.
Cheers.
Bye.
So there we go. Thanks for listening. Hope you enjoyed that. It was a nice, relaxed chat with Ricky. Probably one of my best friends in the business. Known him for years. And is always, always good fun to be with. Again, just coming back to it, if you're enjoying it, if you're liking what you're listening to, then please share it out on any form of social media you care to do. Hashtag it, Wedding Professionals Podcast, TWPP, whatever. Just do what you can, please, to help us out with this. Thanks very much, and I'll see you on the next episode of the Wedding Professionals Podcast. Bye, y'all.